We now go to part two of our interview that featured Michaela Rice, naturalist at Gooseberry Falls State Park, along with her Naturalist Corps intern, Zach Elmore. We're talking today about human and wildlife interactions, the good, the bad, the gray, and the confusing, right here on KTWH. All of us that live not in the inner city, who live on ex-urban to rural environments, we all have lots of opportunities for common wildlife interactions at home. And Zach, you had a good one here that many people have experienced, and that is the good, the bad, and the ugly, and sometimes difficult with raccoons coming and thinking our garbage is a takeout restaurant.
Yeah, I like
or our gardens, for that matter.
Yeah, I like talking about that because, you know, the raccoons are, this time of year, it's important for them to be foraging a lot because the mother raccoons are going to have their kids that are growing up and trying to get to that age of adulthood, which is about 9 months after they've been born. And so that could increase activity for them foraging, which could increase how much they are interacting with us in the sense of coming into our properties or in places where they are visible to us. But also I thought it was important to mention that during this time of increased need to forage, it can drive them out into the daytime. And something that I personally heard growing up a lot is if you see a raccoon in the daytime, it's rabid or it's sick.
Yes.
Which isn't necessarily the case.
Now, we've had an influx at my house. I have to admit, maybe bad practice on my part, a building that had an opening where they could get in a crevice during the winter. It resulted in having a raccoon family breeding this spring, and so two very, very young ones were seen in the middle of the day scurrying along the road, and I thought, probably a parent nearby, taking better advantage of cover than the little ones were.
Yeah, and this, yeah, it's a good example of uncovered chimneys or attics, basements, what have you, that have the ability for wildlife to get in. Raccoons could seek those locations out. November is a ways off of when they're going to start really settling into their dens, but they can be looking for these locations now and residing in them, and getting them out can oftentimes be relatively simple, a matter of just allowing them to leave to go forage and closing that up so they can't get back in.
Okay, so if in fact they go out to forage at night, though, would you be shutting it up at night?
Yeah, you have to wait.
You have to
late night.
You have to choose your times wisely.
Maybe like a midday nap to prepare for the evening.
I can't send a wolverine in there to do an eviction.
No.
Sorry. A classic topic that Michaela and I have spoken of over the months is bird feeders. You think you're feeding a particular species of winged animal, and it isn't always the case of who's going to be attracted to that space. So you want to give us kind of your survey of the issues?
Bird feeders can be a nice box full of some of the favorite foods of black bears. Nice 5 foot off the ground.
A sampler pack.
Yeah, perfect little gift for the black bear to come. They're looking for, you know, between 11 and 18 pounds a day at a minimum of food just to survive. But as we're getting closer here to the end of summer, they're going to start increasing that amount so that they have enough food for when they go winter in, you know, over the winter hibernate. And so a bird feeder is a nice little delectable gift that you're giving to them.
And at those shoulder periods of the year in the Northland, that can be even into late April, May, sometimes early June, people have been doing things like providing fats, suet feeders. I mean, that must be like hitting the jackpot to the bear.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, really good way to, bears climb. And so tell people with food, if you're camping, 10 feet off the ground, 10 feet away from a tree prevents a bear from being able to get access to it. So if you want to have a bird feeder or suet feeder or what have you, apply the same principles of that.
Yep.
Keep it out of reach of the bear. It's not easy. They're not going to come try. But then that means if you're putting it on a 10-foot post, that thing has to be solid in the ground.
Yeah, and some of us have seen bent posts, so we think industrial grade steel, and then we think of, okay, pouring a concrete base, and all of a sudden it sounds like you're building something permanent here, and like you need a building permit.
Right.
And the 10 feet off the ground and away from the tree, a lot like what we tell canoe packers in the boundary waters. And that legitimately does work for protecting that pack, but it can be an art form getting it to easily come down to restock it. Because one thing that we notice is even just the little songbirds go through pounds of sunflower seeds and finch feed in a week in the winter.
And I actually saw an interesting, somebody I knew did their, now this is in the Twin Cities where black bears aren't, you know, really that big of a concern compared to up here population-wise, but they had their bird feeders on clothesline strung between two trees pretty high up. So I just noticed that as an interesting observation of you can just untie that and let that come down to refill.
Yeah, I'd love to see a photo so I could. Yes, we're always looking for kind of the easy way to establish something that's highly refillable and highly inaccessible. We were the raccoon family that I mentioned that we invited into our yard did a great job of taking out suet feeders and finch feeders at night, so we couldn't blame any one species this year. We didn't know what was bear, and except that the bears took the feeders far away.
Yeah, the bears are at least not going to be shimmying along clotheslines and cords. You know that for sure.
Exactly. Well, we're speaking here with Zach Elmore and Michaela Rice from Gooseberry Falls State Park. I kind of ventured far into the topic, but have to venture out kind of before we've really gotten to all the topics that we're going to talk about. But Zach, maybe we could close on being wildlife conscious, which is, I see in your notes to me, seems to all hinge on respecting wildlife and knowing how to show that respect.
Yeah, a good thing to know is anytime an animal, wild animal, sees you, you're interacting with it. And so respecting their space, you know, watching them from a distance, enjoying that interaction. And that's a really important thing I tell people, that it can be a really fun interaction. As long as you just respect the space of the animal, you don't feed it, you don't draw it over to you, and let it go on its way. Don't disturb it during its life, and you can have a really rewarding experience seeing something that maybe you wouldn't have seen otherwise, because we're out often in their environment, their habitat, and so animals can, they're varied individually, you know, and who knows what could happen. It can be unpredictable, so respecting their space, but not doing things that lure them to you, like feeding them repeatedly, doing things like that, can lead to more rewarding and more kind of consistent interactions with wildlife.
Right. And I imagine that things get even more complex if when we're observing these animals that we're also close to a dangerous human interface like a road.
Yeah, driving, animals cross roads. That is a fact. And sometimes you'll be driving and you'll see some deer on the side of the road, near the road. And it's important to not assume that they're not gonna cross the road if they get startled, because they get startled, no one knows where they're going. So slowing down is really good, because that deer could jump out in front of you, that could cause you to swerve or hit it, and then you've got a whole slew of other problems that you've got to deal with. So not necessarily coming to a stop entirely,
right?
But a good example of this would be just a few weeks ago, driving down 61, a adult female moose crossed the highway. And
wow.
Yeah, if I hadn't slowed down and I came to a stop personally because I wanted to see it, but if I hadn't slowed down, you know, I could have hit this moose, and a moose is a very large animal. That's a lot of damage to your car and potentially killing or, you know, severely wounding this animal.
I had extended relatives who were actually killed in a crash with a moose in New England in 40, 50 years ago, and that made an impression. They're an animal that's high up off the ground and could be coming through that windshield. But I think the point you brought up is you would never speed up. Slowing down, speed kills when it comes to people and animals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, is there a more cheerful note than roadkill to end on? I mean,
there is Universe at the Park this Friday.
All right.
So I'm going to plug back
segue
to the park.
Good
yep,
segue
gotta
back
wrap
to Gooseberry.
You. Wrap you all up. So we have our second Universe in the Park event this Friday. We will be at Lady Slipper Lodge at 8:45 for a presentation from the astrophysicists at the U of M, and then we will be out after to stargaze. So please come for that. There are some programs that are posted online that Zach and I will be doing earlier that day, like a Loon's sit-down program at 6:30, also at Lady Slipper. So check the Parks and Trails event calendar, please, and we would love to have you.
A colleague of mine who does a Saturday morning show was playing Loon Calls this past weekend and was reflecting back on how the two of you had been shy about providing us any examples of human attempts at Loon Calls. So will there be any on Saturday?
Maybe if your friend comes. I'm doing my presentation on Friday. Probably not be singing by then, but okay. Maybe. Maybe it's a surprise.
I mean, you could always have a recording, but that would be cheating.
We do. We have some recordings. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We just wanted to know how close you could come under pressure to emulating the various
I need
there's
to be bribed.
So many different aspects of the loon call, but will we hear about some of those different
versions? Yes, absolutely. We get into that. Mm-hmm.
All good things must come to an end, and I think this just invites us back to maybe do a little bit more deep dive on human-wildlife interactions over time with other species even. But thank you for a thoughtful look today, and we'll see you down the road on Wandering Nature News. Any last thoughts, Zach?
Juneberries are at the park, and they are good.
Wow. So they lag behind a little bit along the shore, and that's good for those who miss them inland.
Yes, they're at their peak. We've been bean bears the last few weeks eating all the berries, so it's been fun.
Yeah, you could start eating them, and next thing you know, you've been in the park for 6 hours, and you've got a stomach ache.
That's good advice for park visitors, what to keep an eye out for. Thanks a lot, folks, and we will see you soon on the radio again on Wandering Nature News.
Goodbye.
Bye now. This is Leo for KTWH, Two Harbors Community Radio.